Support for Aspen Public Radio comes from Balcom & Green PC, a full-service law firm with offices in Glenwood Springs, Aspen, and Basalt, providing advice and solutions for their clients' legal needs throughout Western Colorado for more than 60 years. Learn more at balcomgreen.com.
Welcome to Valley Roundup. I'm Carolyn Sakariasen. Crimes associated with methamphetamine are making headlines in newspapers up and down the valley. But whether that indicates an uptick in crime is unlikely.
Our weekly crime briefs have a lot of meth incidents, people passing through on I-70, a lot of people with quantities that are seen as distribution-type quantities, both in Glenwood and in Rifle.
In Aspen, a man Time magazine once called one of the top 10 imposters built a rogue shack on Shadow Mountain and is now in jail.
Far be it from me to praise a guy who appears to be a thief, but, you know, it's a pretty unique way to solve the housing problem around here. You got to give him some
credit,
props,
right?
Maybe for that.
A grass fire broke out just east of Glenwood Springs last week and took down one house. Traffic headed west on Highway 82 was jammed up for miles as a result. And the owners of the Hotel Denver bought the Redstone Castle for just over $2 million. They say they are going to keep it open to the public and even let people rent rooms. The Forest Service has a plan to control the masses in the high country. It's the highly anticipated permitting system.
Probably a good idea. And we're fortunate in this area because our 14ers are the least trod in the whole state. You'd think it would be down parts of the San Juans.
Meanwhile, Snowmass Village is on a path of success with record sales tax revenues and higher than normal real estate sales. Plus, it looks like the sale of Bass Village will happen soon. Finally, the construction boom is having an effect, both positive and negative, on the valley. Joining me this week are Jason Auslander, crime reporter for the Aspen Times, Randy Essex, editor and publisher of the Glenwood Post-Independent, and Madeline Osberger, contributing editor of the Aspen Daily News. Thanks for coming into the studio and Randy being on the phone in Glenwood Springs.
Happy to be here.
Thanks.
Thank you.
So there seems to be a common headline that happens throughout the valley. There's an uptick in crime, it seems, based on people who are on methamphetamine. I know there was a headline in the Glenwood Post-Independent about a man who shot up a woman's car, and he had 13 grams of meth. And then there was a young man who was arrested after stealing some merchandise at Louis Vuitton. And it appears from what the Aspen police are telling you, Jason, that the kid had to have been on meth, right?
They think that he was on something, and that's the most likely culprit based on his behavior.
And that's where an off-duty policeman happened to be shopping nearby and helped out as well.
Yeah, he was in the store when the guy tried to leave by the front door, and an employee stopped him. So the guy saw him. The guy ran out. The kid ran out the side door, and then the deputy from El Paso County saw him again on the street and was able to hold him on the ground, called the cops, held him on the ground. And then the cops got there. And I actually saw the video of this because the only Aspen cop who routinely wears a camera showed me the video of it. And, you know, this kid, 5'5", 5'6", maybe 130 pounds, soaking wet, took three Aspen police officers that are each over 6 feet tall, probably each 180, to corral this kid. I mean, he was fighting hard. And I'm told he's a fighter, but that's why they thought he was on something, probably meth.
And isn't that also the case for the guy who tore up the jail?
Yeah, that's, you know, he's the latest in kind of a string that's happened over the summer. There was the guy that tore up the jail. There was the
naked guy.
The naked guy down valley that guy was seriously mentally ill. And then there was Brolin McConnell up on the, which they thought was on meth. He turned out not to have anything in his
wow.
system.
So he's the one who took the two hostages up Lincoln Creek.
Three hostages
up Lincoln Creek. And then he's going in front of a judge today.
Today, yeah, he has a preliminary hearing in district court, so we'll see what happens there.
But he wasn't on any drugs as far as the cops.
A little bit of THC was all they found, and that was in the documents. They saw his vape pen, and that was pretty well reported. So.
And Randy, your paper reported that there was a guy who had a large amount of methamphetamine on him.
Yeah, our weekly crime briefs, too, have a lot of meth incidents, people passing through on I-70, you know, a lot of people with quantities that are seen as dealer distribution-type quantities, both in Glenwood and in Rifle. It's kind of a throwback to me as I've worked around the country. You know, meth was huge in the 90s. In Iowa in particular, there were Mexican cartels that were manufacturing huge amounts of meth that were better in quality, and the distribution networks superseded the sort of motorcycle gang, you know, homebrew meth that was common for a long time. So there's a lot of money to be made in meth at the time. And then nationally, you know, I was in Cincinnati for 2 years, just across the river from Kentucky, and heroin and prescription opioids, which are chemical siblings, were the big thing. And nationally, the Republican Party actually latched on to the opioid heroin crisis, which is the worst it's ever been in the United States. You know, there are more people using heroin. A lot of them got started because they got started on prescription opioids, which have exploded since the mid-90s. So we don't have much of that. I mean, there are certainly people who are on opioid painkillers here. There are some heroin cases, but we really, in the Roaring Fork and Colorado River Valleys, haven't particularly caught up with the rest of the country in terms of heroin. And we still have an awfully lot of meth, certainly in Garfield County. And the standard understanding of meth is that people who work long hours at boring jobs, you know, construction, road work, I'm not so sure about natural gas workers because, you know, there's a lot of dangerous equipment around. But always the stereotype of meth is that that's your market for meth, is that it's kind of blue-collar, brown-collar people who have to be awake for a long time, need that energy, and then, of course, it just becomes this horrible, addictive drug that, you know, ruins your teeth and causes you to shoot up a girlfriend's car.
I think both meth and heroin, though, haven't traditionally been as large a part, at least to the Upper Valley up here, as they have been in recent, even months. And, you know, I think that they're definitely, I hear, you know, the police are running into more overdoses on heroin around here. And, you know, there's no doubt that meth is affecting some of the crime. And there was another kid that was caught a couple times. They kept letting him out, and he kept smoking more meth, and he was going downhill, and then to the point in court where he was saying that he wanted to die.
Right.
So, I mean, it's affecting people, it's affecting the crime, you know, whether it's a huge problem here, you know, compared to what, I don't know, but it's definitely around, and it hasn't been before.
One thing I would say, Carolyn, I would caution against saying crime is up. It's probably not. You know, the post-independent, the last couple of years, has been more systematic about reporting felonies. The Aspen Times is pretty thorough in reporting crime stories, and some of the crime stories are interesting, let's say, and they get a lot of attention, but statistically I do tend to doubt that crime is up.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mean to imply crime is up. I'm just saying that
there's,
you know, meth is more present now than it has been before.
That's the case. And I don't know if that's what law enforcement's saying in Garfield County or Glenwood Springs or the city of Rifle, but to me, a lot of these arrests are attached to methamphetamine.
Maybe it's just the perception. These are such violent crimes, like what the PI reported about that guy shooting up the woman's car. You just referenced it a second ago. I didn't realize that was the girlfriend-boyfriend situation. I thought it was a drug dealer user situation, Randy.
It's hard to say.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
It's hard to say whose story was closer to accurate, you know? I don't know. I don't know that they were in a relationship. I may have missed
one of the things about meth, though, is that meth mirrors the symptoms of schizophrenia and other mental illnesses. So it's basically like making yourself into a mentally ill person. And so people can act all kinds of crazy, and, you know, that's what it does to you.
And you may run into that person on the street, and that's where it starts to affect the public. And so, Randy, has the law enforcement in your coverage area said much about the use of meth and how it relates to crime?
You know, in conversations with Terry Wilson and Lou Valario, just about what drugs are trending here, I mean, certainly meth is an ongoing problem in Garfield County. I am reluctant to make the statement that you did that crime is up, because statistically, I doubt that that's the case.
But is violent crime up?
If you look at the end of the year, I doubt it.
Maybe just reporting is up.
I think that, and I think that, you know, there may be some situations that reporters have a hard time not reporting. I do think that both the Times and the Post-Independent are reporting more crime stories.
And the Aspen Daily News, too.
You are listening to Valley Roundup, an analysis and commentary of the week's news with writers and editors. That was Madeline Osberger from the Aspen Daily News and Randy Essex from the Glenwood Post-Independent. I'm Carolyn Sakariasen. We now turn to Jason Auslander, the crime reporter for the Aspen Times. There's a lot that's happened since the election and leading up to the election, and we've been focused so much on that on this show that a lot of things have gone by the wayside, like Main Street Bakery closed, which is a longtime business, and there's this con man, which is just a total Aspen story, talking about crime. This Mr. Hoag, who built a shack on Shadow Mountain, and turns out he had a big racket going on.
Yeah, they found quite a bit of goods. I mean, I guess 4 or 5 jackets, 3 or 4 pairs of ski pants, a Ralph Lauren cashmere sweater with $1,000 price tag on it that the
Trek
store.
Trek bicycle.
That was on. So, and
what, $14,000 in cash?
More like $16,700. And a lot of, you know, postal supplies and then a detective said he also saw this guy's eBay account that stopped about the time they think he moved here, which was mid to fall 2015. And that's what he's gotten in trouble in Boulder County for. But he had like $70,000 worth of sales over a couple of years on this eBay account. So, I mean.
Wow.
So give us a rundown. This guy, he's a notorious imposter who went to Princeton and said he was.
Yeah, it's a pretty incredible story. If you Google him, you'll come up with a top 10 con men in the country from Time Magazine, and he was named one of them.
Wow.
He was a track star in Kansas, and he supposedly ran a sub 4-minute mile, and the detective, Jeff, asked him about that apparently in jail, and he said, no, I didn't do that. According to Jeff, I ran a 4:05. So 5 seconds over, which is pretty quick. I mean, the guy can run probably 2 miles and quicker than most of us can run one. But
he still got caught by the cops.
Well, anyway, so he apparently went on a track scholarship to Wyoming and didn't do so well, and then disappeared for a while, and then ended up at a high school in Palo Alto posing as a 16-year-old when he was 26. And
what was the purpose of that?
It's a little hard to figure out from the stories. It may have had something to do with him wanting to get a scholarship to Stanford. And so he needed some sort of high school record to be able to do that. So I'm not exactly sure if that was the motivation behind it. But, as these things happen, an enterprising reporter started looking into it and looked at his birth certificate and found out that the name that he was using at the time was a kid that died after being like 2 days old in 1969, and so that scam was uncovered. And then he popped up a few years later, and he accepted a scholarship. Princeton offered him a track scholarship, and he was there for 2 years posing as a Princeton student, and wouldn't have gotten caught, probably would have gotten away with it if unless there was a, well, what happened was somebody, there was a Yale-Princeton track meet, and somebody from Palo Alto recognized him and knew that whole story from, and said, hey, wait a minute, that's this guy. And so that was turned over. So he, and then he's, you know, he's got a history of theft. He's done, he was in Pueblo for a few years, I think, for some thefts down in the Telluride area.
Right. I remember when that all
and then he showed up here. Yeah. And decided, you know, to solve his own housing crisis problem by building his own little shack on the middle of a side of a hill.
I mean, far be it from me to praise a guy who appears to be a thief, but, you know, it's a pretty unique way to solve the housing problem around here. You got to give him some credit, maybe, for that. But, yeah, he built a fully enclosed shack up there that had a foundation. It was insulated. It had, you know, the comforts of home. And they think that he may have been – he stole a couple of electrical cords that were really long and may have been running them down the mountain to the top of the Shadow Mountain condos where there was an outlet that faced up the mountain.
Wow.
So he may have had power up there too. And SkiCo employees saw him going in and out all winter long last year apparently, but just didn't really – it never filtered down to police.
Right. Hey, Randy, you had kind of a big fire near Glenwood last week.
Friday, very spectacular because it was right along Highway 82 at the Spring Valley CMC turnoff. A house caught fire. We checked back. They don't know the cause yet, although they don't think it was suspicious, and it was windy. So the flames actually blew over to two other houses, one of which was damage, I guess, fairly significantly, and the other one, it was exterior damage on the roof. And I think that the unexpected thing was, I mean, the fire was generally out by late afternoon, but there were still, there was still one lane closed. It really was a factor in messing up traffic on Friday night.
Oh, yeah, I was driving back from Glenwood around 5 o'clock, and the traffic going west was, I mean, it was miles and miles of just stopped traffic.
So, and whenever that happens now, I think about what's going to happen next August when the bridge closes and all of that traffic has to weave through Glenwood Springs to get to the West Glenwood exit. And there was just a meeting of businesses, the CDOT bridge team, talking about, you know, getting serious about carpooling and changing times and taking whatever other measures that we can to cut into the crosstown traffic during the bridge closure. But, you know, you folks aren't going to be unaffected by it.
We'll just go around the pass and just go to Denver to get our stuff.
There you go.
But that is going to be...
Except we're trapped for the next few months.
Having seen that traffic, that is a little bit more of a reality check.
Did it have something to do with the basalt underpass too? Because aren't they rejiggering the entire highway in that area?
That's part of that,
I mean,
too.
And that's going to go all the way up to the bridge closure, I think, that construction.
It goes till next spring.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, maybe not all the way up to it.
Also in the news in Glenwood Springs is that the Hotel Denver owner has bought the Redstone Castle, which is pretty cool. So that will remain open to the public, right?
Even more so. They want to redecorate some suites and rent out rooms so people will be able to stay there, I think, for the first time in, 14 or 15 years. Hmm. And it's the first local owner in that period of time, too. So that is neat. It's a local attraction amenity that it looks like it's going to be preserved, and they're going to keep doing the weekend tours, and people will even be able to stay there. And then the Carvers, who bought it, also plan to be on site quite a bit. So yeah, good deal.
They got a good deal for it too. They paid what, $2.2 million?
$2.2 million bargain basement castle price.
Can't get a condo here for that.
Right.
They're also finishing up the Redstone Coke Oven project in the next few months, too. They're going to do a trail, and that's going to be all finished. A parking lot that's off the highway and a little safer.
Good.
So that whole area, you know, may be a new attraction, more so than that.
Yeah,
well, then
great.
Maybe it'll divert some people from the backcountry, which is where I'm going next on this Forest Service has come out with the management plan, which has been talked about a lot. I don't think it's surprising to anyone that they're coming out with a permit system for the more popular areas of the backcountry in this Maroon Bells Snowmass Wilderness area. So it looks like, based on what their draft plan is that they're going to limit the number of groups in a certain area.
It's probably a good idea.
I think it's a great idea.
And we're fortunate in this area because our 14ers are the least trod in the whole state.
Is that right?
Yeah, the 14ers surrounding this area. You'd think it would be down parts of the San Juans, but...
Well, it's such a popular area, and, you know, from all the reports we're getting from the Forest Service, the people are just trashing it up there, that four-pass loop and all of that, and irresponsible camping and not, you know, burying waste and that sort of thing.
Right.
And, you know, this is not a new idea. They've been doing this for years in other places. If you go to Zion and try to go canyoneering or, you know, get a backcountry permit, you know, there's only so many of them.
Well, Randy, I mean, don't you think it would be nice to do a day use permit system for like Hanging Lake? Because
absolutely,
it's not even worth going.
It keeps getting more damaged every year.
Right, so they should start looking at even day use.
I can't believe they're not at Hanging Lake. You always see that parking area closed during the summer, and you know,
it's been discussed. You know. CDOT and the Forest Service contracted, I believe it's a branch of the U.S. Department of Transportation, has this little almost think tank-like division called the Volpe Institute. And it has been, for a couple of years, studying what to do about the Hanging Lake crowds. And the first piece of that was the kiosk with the gate and the signage that basically says the lot's full, don't come here. And then I think that they will be moving towards some sort of ticket or permit system so that you can buy a ticket for the morning and it's good for this period of time and you have to have it to get into the parking lot. I think we'll see that within a couple of years at Hanging Lake, which is it's so needed.
And then, of course, it'll happen in Redstone. Once that becomes popular.
Right.
You know, I mean, what else are they supposed to do? You can't just let it get trashed.
Right. This is Valley Roundup, a weekly media roundtable of analysis and commentary with editors and writers. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen. We now continue our discussion about what's happened in Snowmass Village and beyond. Let's talk about Snowmass. There was an election. We kind of ignored some of the basic things, the news that's happening. But Madeline, you cover Snowmass predominantly, and a couple things happened. One, sales tax revenues up, so it's a successful village.
All-time high this summer, trending towards the end of the year. Now, this snow situation, that could impact how we're going to finish the year.
I think what Snowmass has finally realized, they bring those events in. They've really focused a lot on bringing the Mammoth Festival, Tough Mudder, you know, some of those bigger
Wanderlust.
Wanderlust
is not coming back. Yeah, the mountain biking.
So that's been a huge success for them.
Yes, I think that's true. They have worked hard with their special events. We'll see how the year ends. And the RET is up, too.
The
real estate transfer tax is trending towards finishing the year ahead. We will see. The base village sale is supposed to close, so that will give it a big boost.
Right, of course. And then, the thorn in everyone's side, at least in the town hall, Richard Goodwin, who ran for mayor unsuccessfully. He didn't want the position anyway. He just wanted to bring the issues to light. He settled his lawsuit with the town.
He did.
And can you just briefly say what that lawsuit was?
He was suing the town over ex parte conversation that he felt led to the vote 2 years ago to the vesting rights extension for the Vase Village project. If the developers would have had to have gone back and redone everything, it would have been millions and millions of extra dollars for employee housing and transportation costs. So they figured they didn't want to mess with that. So Richard alleged ex parte conversation. This summer, the judge said no. He was going to appeal, and then he decided to drop it, I think, when he saw some of the attorney's fees. And I think they reached a pretty good settlement.
So the town of Snowmass Village is... budget's doing well, but there are other ones that are not. And Basalt's going to look at having to cut what their spending is. Carbondale is looking at hitting their reserves for their basic needs, and the oil and gas slump is posing greater economic hurdles in Garfield County. Randy, what do you know about the economy as it relates to that industry, and then what's going on in Carbondale?
So the county, being as dependent as it is on oil and gas, is, or on natural gas, is looking at some cuts, and the library district, and it's really complicated. I don't think we could adequately get into to the why on the radio, but the library district in particular is hurt by the natural gas slump and is looking at cuts and may end up limiting hours and doing layoffs. They had trouble hiring a director because for what they could pay under the circumstances, getting somebody to move here just wasn't plausible. I do think that part of the story of the economy, though, is the surprising resilience. You know, Glenwood Springs tax receipts are steadily 5-6% up over for the year, and that's with the bridge project going on, and that's with natural gas employment in the county being down. And I think that you have to look at all the construction that's going on in the county. We're completely renovating a school here in Glenwood Springs, building a new school down valley. There are some housing projects underway. If you go in Basalt, there's the underpass, there's construction there. Of course, we have the bridge project going on, and all that's putting money in people's pockets. And
we should thank the government then.
Receipts. Well, yeah, there's also some multifamily housing that's going up, but the big projects certainly are government projects.
You know, it seems like a lot of construction's going on around here. Yes. The off season, I mean, is there
Nada.
Usually there's a ton of construction?
Almost, yeah, government again. Yeah.
But is it all? Do you think?
Well, we have this giant crane right behind the Aspen Public Radio offices that isn't government.
And then there's another one down the street from our offices on Hyman, or at least there used to be that one, supposedly the basketball players.
Oh, yeah, the double basement.
Right.
Right. So, yeah, so I guess you're right, Randy. It's private sector as well. But so that shows that the economy is doing well.
The economy is pretty resilient. I mean, if you just look at the headwinds, you'd think, gosh, we're in real trouble. But even Rifle, which is, you know, more over in Gasland, has been pretty steady in terms of its tax receipts this year.
It's just because we're diversified? Is that what, not so reliant upon oil?
Well, construction has a really long tail through the economy. I mean, the workers buy lunches. They might decide this is the right time to build a deck. You know, the subcontractor might decide I need 3 new pickup trucks. You know, construction is really good economic activity, which is actually something to be optimistic about regarding the Trump administration, because he has talked about putting people back to work with infrastructure jobs to, you know.
Right, like the Democrats tried to do.
He's going to have to find jobs for people.
Didn't
the best way to do that is to start building, you know, roads and bridges and sewers, and the country needs it really badly. And, you know, Congress has refused to go along with Obama's proposals for political reasons. So there'll probably be more construction work.
You're probably right. That much-needed infrastructure work that the Republicans fought for 8 years under Obama's administration is going to happen now.
Yep.
Great. Okay, well, that's all the time we've got. So thanks for joining me for this
week. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
That was Madeline Osberger, contributing editor of the Aspen Daily News, Randy Essex, editor and publisher of the Glenwood Post-Independent, and Jason Auslander, crime reporter for the Aspen Times. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen, and you've been listening to Valley Roundup. You can also get a rundown of links and more information on the stories covered on this show on our website, aspenpublicradio.org. Valley Roundup is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.